There are men who believe there are only 7 Steely Dan albums. There are men who believe Steely Dan is just one guy, apparently named Steely. And then there's Adam Bernstein and Doug Bost. Two men who should have better things to do, but aren't doing them right now. These are two grown-ass men.
Grown-ass men.
With special grown-ass guest, Joan LeMay, illustrator, painter, and co-author with Alex Papademos of the book Quantum Criminals.
Miss Joan LeMay, she is your artist. When Kathy Bavarian comes to yodel at your door, a Charlie freak is crawling round your floor. Hey, Donald and Walter, I bet you're hiding out in Queens. I'm afraid it's time for your portraits. She has a box of paints, brushes, canvas, and paints. Miss LeMay will see you now.
Hi, Joan.
Hey, how are you?
Great. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's a delight.
Oh, well, listen, don't be delighted yet. We're just starting.
We are delighted to talk with you about your amazing book.
Thank you. Oh my God.
We enjoyed meeting you and Alex so much at the bookstore in Brooklyn. And I've been marking up places that I love, quotes that I love from the book, but mostly the illustrations that I that I'm crazy about in the book.
You.
It's fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Where are you now?
I am now in New York. I have relocated to New York from London as of like 2.5 weeks ago, I want to say. And I'm really, really, really happy to be back here because I have missed it tremendously. I was born in Houston, grew up kind of outside of Houston, and then I moved at the turn of the millennium to Chicago. I was there for a handful of years, and then I was in the Pacific Northwest. I was in Seattle, and I was in Portland, and then New York, and then more places after that. Long story short, I'm tired now. I'm in my mid-40s. New York is where I want to die. I don't ever want to leave. This is it. I'm done. And that's it.
Well, we are two grown-ass men who mostly like to talk about comics. We also are big Steely Dan fans. And we already did. We did an episode a while ago about Walter Becker when he passed away. But just seeing the cover of Quantum Criminals was cool. And then when we got to go to the bookstore and see you and Alex talk about it, that was great. But I was hoping that we could just talk with you about the illustrations in this book. And it's so interesting that the book is driven not just by the text about Steely Dan, but it's really driven by your art. By the way, who doesn't love your book? Matt Fraction loves your book. Michael Chabon loves your book. Amy Mann loves your book. This is fantastic. How do you know Matt Fraction?
I don't know Matt Fraction, but Alex Papademos, the writer of this fine tome, Alex has known Matt for a while. I've known Amy for a while. So we each were able to ask our friends of taste and influence, hey, would you mind doing us the solid of blurbing this? And and they graciously did, and we're very thankful.
They blurbed the hell out of it.
They did.
How long did it take you to do all these illustrations for the book?
So once we got going, once we really got started and it was like, okay, pedal to the metal, I think, you know, tip to tail, it took a year for the book to be done. But I was done with my painting part before Alex was done with his text. So I was done in about 7 months or so. And then as Alex finished the text, then I would go and paint some more to some of his text, or there were some things where it was like, okay, he realized he wanted to do a third world man. That was something that we added. But it's funny, I love the question of how long did it take to make paintings, because sometimes it takes an hour, sometimes it takes months. These are simple paintings that are gouache on paper. They're not, you know, giant oils on canvas or anything like that, but it's much like writing or songwriting or anything else. You know, the time it takes to do something is also like, how long does it take to record an episode of this podcast? Well, you know, an hour and some change, but it's been y'all's whole lives of being consumers of things you love and thinking about things that has given you the drive and the passion and the inventory to make this podcast and to be like, oh, we want to talk to this person, we want to ask this person questions. So it's kind of with the making the paintings for the books, it's like I've had ideas in my mind loosely of what these people look like for a really long time. So it was easy in a lot of cases to translate that.
What I love is how these people come to life on the page. They're such individual, specific people. They're fantastic. Franny from NYU is just like a really special person. And, you know, looking at it, how much did you work from people who you know or photographs?
Yeah. So I had a folder on my desktop that I called the Dan Casting Gallery. And it was full. It was exactly how it sounds. And it was full of found photos and photos of friends and family and photos from clothing catalogs and sewing catalogs from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and just sort of various other images, like photos that I've taken over the years. I remember there was one specific trip to Genoa, Italy, where outside of there was a super, super old school restaurant there where plastered on the walls were photos of the clientele going back to the 60s. And I took a bunch of photos of those photos, and a lot of people in the book are the bodies are modeled after those guys, or the faces are modeled after those guys. So when I was thinking about a character, I would a lot of the time go through that casting gallery and then see somebody's face. And I'd be like, oh, this is the guy from my rival. This is what this is. And then also it was during the pandemic that this was made. So I didn't have the luxury of being able to corral other human beings and say, can I put you in this chair in this position? Can I da 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 da? So I took a bunch of photos of my own body and used that as just kind of a armature. Very obviously, a lot of the outfits are just, you know, made up ridiculousness. and I was in a real state when I was doing this, and so there's a lot of stuff that I did. And then the next morning I would go back up to the attic where I painted and look at it and go, whoa.
But you must have really known the characters in these songs well to go, oh, I'm looking at this photo. Yeah, that's Rose Darling, right?
Oh,
there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm a lifelong Steely Dan person. Those records are just, I feel like they're etched into my DNA. They're more comforting than Christmas songs. You know, they're signifiers of a home that could seem okay for a little while growing. They're my parents didn't have many records, but they had the Steely Dan catalog.
There's also a thing about Steely Dan, I think, that kind of invites obsession. in a way. Yes. And I don't know why exactly.
I think because it's the onion that never gets unpeeled. It's the Tootsie Pop where you never reach the center. So I think as you grow and mature, the way that you listen to music grows and matures, and the nuance with which you pay attention to it grows and matures. And obviously your understanding of the world grows and matures, and the things that you tune into change. And so it's this ever deepening thing. I mean, certainly when I was listening to Bacon sing about Mr. LePage when I was a kid, I had no idea about the subtext. When I was listening to Babylon Sisters, I had no idea. You know, I didn't know what the fine Colombian was when I was seven.
Yeah, I was just saying, like, I remember Ricky Don't Lose That Number was a single. Yeah. So I remember that on the radio and I was into it. And I bought Asia when it came out because I was just like, all right, I was by then buying everything that came out, no matter what came out. Mm-hmm. You know, but then my crowd that I was in, we had a few big Steely Dan fans and we started to get through the albums in order.
Nice.
And that was the real thing. And like, I absorbed those albums so intensely, but one at a time.
Ooh.
And they have a finite amount of music.
Yes. Yes.
That really is a good thing. In the way that like the Beatles are.
Yes. Know. It is good that it's finite. I think that the finite nature of it too, and the fact that they don't want unintentional things out there. They want it to be their art as they intended it to be consumed, and not just kind of stuff that slips through the cracks, but that edited, curated selection that we have in front of us. It's like, I'm going to make a really cheesy AB, but it's like Vermeer paintings. There's like 18 of them. So yeah, everybody knows those Vermeer paintings really, really well. And it's, yeah, being able, having the concise vision and collection. It behooves the obsessive listener It invites the obsessive listener to like.
I like behooves though.
I like behooves.
I think behooves in general. What what was the initial idea for this book? Was it your idea and you got Alex involved in it? How do you know Alex?
So it was two separate projects that came together. So Alex and I had known each other for like 20 years, because he's been one of Earth's most fantastic music writers and pop culture writers forever. I've been a fan forever, and he's just so mind-blowingly incredible. I love his voice. I love his mind. He's just, to get to work on this stuff with him is incredible. But he was for a while back in the day the reviews editor at Spin, and I was a music publicist for 17 years. And so way back, we, you know, when there were fax machines and telephones, I used to call Alex on the phone and pitch him bands and say, I faxed you a press kit. So we'd been corresponding about stuff for a really long time, but didn't know each other. It was just the publicist bothering the music editor, music writer. So way fast forward, we have a mutual friend who's a woman named Jessica Hopper, editor, filmmaker. She's a mind-blowing director. And she became one of the editors at the University of Texas American Music Series. And so as soon as that happened, she got in touch with Alex, because obviously one would. And she was like, hey, what do you want to do? What do you want to write? And Alex thought about it for a little while and he was like, well, what am I never, ever, ever going to get tired of thinking about? Because whenever you decide to write a book, that's going to be your life for like a while. And he's like, oh, Steely Dan. And so he'd made a proposal, had spoken with her, and was in the sort of nascent stage of putting something together for like a year and a half, something like that. Fast forward to a few years ago, and I, at the beginning of the pandemic, I had the idea to make a Steely Dan fanzine called Danzine, wherein I was going to paint all 200 and some odd named characters in the entire oeuvre. And I'd gotten really into painting things in series. I still really like to paint things in series. There's something really satisfying about painting 100 of something. And it's also, there's something about the repetition of it that kind of justifies the existence of each one, each part of the whole. And so I'd started that, posted it on Instagram. Both Alex and Jessica saw it simultaneously. And Alex has told me that at first he was mad because he was like, God, it's such a great idea. And then he was like, oh, wait. And then Hopper was like, this needs to be a thing together. And so she texted me and said, Joni, that's not a fanzine, that's a book. And so our two projects merged and became the way that my fanzine was organized became the organizing principle for the book, to write about them through the foci of using the characters as foci. That's how that came about. That was kind of long-winded, but
that's amazing.
I mean, it's funny, you know, like all the focus on the characters and the lyrics, you know, being a musician, like for me, the thing that really was the focus was the music.
Yeah.
And I didn't always like focus on who those weird characters were till a little bit later.
This is obvious, kind of. It's especially obvious now that this book, Quantum Criminals, exists. But Steely Dan songs are packed with characters.
Yes.
And that's unusual. I was telling Adam, I think of Randy Newman's songs as having a lot of characters. Yeah. Every song is a different character almost for Randy, but, but Steely Dan is kind of the same way. They have at least as many characters or many more as you're showing by all the people you're painting in this book.
Oh yeah. And because I do forget what my final count was, but we made this large spreadsheet to organize all of this, to communicate about it, that I called the Master Daniverse character sheet. And, you know, because we had to truncate the number of people, both because of budgetary constraints and also just because it quickly becomes biblical and just massive. But so many. And Alex and I have had a lot of conversations about that as a thing that doesn't exist in the same way in popular music anymore, and that we wish hope that comes back a little bit. There's something that I think it's natural a lot of the time for listeners to assume that a singer is singing autobiographically, that a singer is singing about themselves. And I think it's hard to disavow fans of that notion when they think, oh, this must be about this person's life. This must be first person in this kind of way. This must have been something that really happened, blah, 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 blah. I think there's so much more that's possible in terms of conveying the nuances of human experience, the human experience when you're telling stories with names, when you're using characters as archetypes, when you're kind of throwing down allegory, when it's easier to talk about deeper truths, when you're like, okay, here's guy A, B, and C, as opposed to just talking about yourself as a protagonist, whether or not it's truly autobiographical.
Who are the characters that really stuck with you from the beginning, with Steely Dan songs?
I remember when I was little, I used to sing Josie as Joni because it was close, and I didn't understand, again, not understanding the real meaning of the song and who Josie is in that song. And Ricky, you know, I was always drawn to the lady characters. There were certain folks that I really, really, really enjoyed painting the woolly man without a face. I loved painting Kathy Barbarian, a real person who existed.
Right. The fantastic robe.
Oh, her caftan. I knew I was going to give her some sort of fabulous space caftan. But yeah, both Alex and I got a kick out of researching her. And I really want somebody somewhere to write a, make a, I want there to be a Kathy Barbarian doc or a Kathy Barbarian book, or I just want to know more. I really want to know more. Yeah. I mean, there were so many. The squonk makes me want to cry every time I think about him.
And the squonk's tears.
Squonk, because squonk is in two different songs, right? This is the Genesis song too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Was,
oh, wow. They're in what they never would ever meet, those two bands. They would fight, in fact.
Perhaps. Yeah. I don't know about Phil Collins and Fagan in a room. I don't know what, I don't know exactly what would happen.
They would get along because Phil Collins has other interests as a drummer, but
yeah.
Right.
Mike Rutherford and Tony Banks are so British upper.
Yeah, class. Yeah, 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 for sure.
Walter Becker would just make merciless fun of them, I think.
Yeah.
They wouldn't fight physically. They would fight mentally.
Oh, definitely fight mentally. There would be passive aggression so thick you'd cut it with a knife. You know? Steely knife.
Well, I remember something that you said when we were at the bookstore. You said that you made a list of all the I's and U's.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Because that is the kind of Steely Dan obsession that I totally get into.
Mm-hmm. That was just my process when I was making the spreadsheet. Is I wasn't sure, and this was just at the beginning, as I was going through, I was both listening to every song and going on like lyricsfind.com and azlyrics.com and listening through, and every time a figure appeared, whether it was I, me, we, or a proper name, I listed it, listed the song, listed the album. And then from there, the editing began. But I wasn't sure at the outset how many people there were.
Maybe there aren't any Steely Dan songs that don't use I, you, or we.
I would have to go back to the tape on that.
There might not be. There might not be any.
Wow.
Yeah.
One thing that was really interesting to me was that a lot of times behind the characters, you have these really interesting backgrounds. What's up with that?
What's up with that is, and yeah. Thanks for asking, all they're color coded to the palette of the artwork, the album artwork in which the character appears, also appears in the background as the abstract blobs. But that the abstract kind of swashes of color are,
yeah.
That's something that I had previously employed in my portraiture practice. So it was just something that I kind of did. I think it's like a Costco level appropriation of some of Alice Neal's sort of organizing factors in the backgrounds of her paintings. But I used it partially as a way to sort of keep things organized and straight visually for myself.
Because the background colors refer to the album art.
Yes, correct.
That's amazing.
That's right.
So I don't know if you could see this.
The Eagles.
You have, you made the original Eagles.
Yes.
And obviously, turn up the Eagles. The neighbors are listening, I think.
Yes.
You made Glenn Frey absolutely grotesque.
I did.
He can't, I mean, it's too late for him to say anything. And they're all so nasty to each other. They'd probably be happy mm-hmm. that you did. But that, mm-hmm. I was really struck by that.
Thanks. Yeah, I think they all look pretty bananas. I remember laughing when I painted that. You know what I'm mad about? I'm going to say, Steely Dan, about to be on tour, the Eagles farewell tour.
Oh, yeah.
What I'm mad about is my lack of $9 million, I guess. I got on for the pre-sale 2 nights here in Madison Square Garden on my birthday. I was in the queue. Finally, I came up. The cheapest ticket was $1,300.
Oh.
And I do not have $1,300.
What? Why would you? Why would you pay that? I saw that too.
Yeah.
I saw tickets for $2,500.
Yeah.
For that show.
Yeah.
I cannot imagine what would happen in the theater that would make it worth $2,500.
I don't know. I don't know if I want to know.
If they were warming up for Pure Prairie League.
Yes.
I'm totally down with it.
Or Poco. Know?
Or yeah. Poco. But for the Eagles, no, I'm not doing it.
Right. But not, not that I won't hate on the Eagles. I know the words to God knows how many Eagles songs. I grew up listening to the Eagles. But however, I'm not, that's not, that ain't happening.
You're completely correct about that.
Thank you.
Are there any characters who did not make the book who you drew or painted or wanted to?
You know, I wanted to paint everybody, and who knows, we might do some extra publications with more of the characters. Both Alex and I, if there was anything that either of us really wanted to do, they're in there.
They're in there.
It was like, oh yeah, absolutely. Because we both wanted to do everything. So there was nothing that,
That's one of the things that I love about your book too, is that you're not stingy about the last two records. Mm-mm. Like, because they're real Steely Dan records.
Yes.
And I love that you include all those characters too.
So many characters. Everything Must Go is just like busloads of people. There's so many. And both Alex and I spent a lot more time with those records during this project, because I don't normally reach for them.
Yeah.
I love them, but it's not you're sad and you need a bowl of chocolate ice cream. You're sad and you need to listen to Gaucho.
They wear out much faster than any of the earlier albums for me. Yeah.
I agree.
For me, the first six, or I mean, everyone says the first seven, but for me, the first six are just, they're always in the,
yep,
you know, the ether of what I want to hear. I did want to say, I love the Rose Darling.
Thank you. That that is modeled after my very beautiful friend, Britton Ashford, who is an incredible musician and actress. And I knew that she was Rose Darling. I have some friends. They're like dear friends peppered throughout too. And certain people who were like, ooh, I want to be this person. And then I was like, that's right.
The Gaucho. Tell me about where you got this guy from, because he's such a real person to me.
He is a real person. He is modeled after my dear friend Torkel Campbell, who is a musician. He has a band called Stars, and he's a massive Steely Dan fan. And when I was talking to him, we've been friends for like 20 some odd years. And when I was talking with him about the fact that the book was happening, he was like, Joan, can I be the Gaucho? I was like, Tork, yes. You're the Gaucho. So that's kind of why it looks like somebody dressed up as the Gaucho, because it is.
Right. Right before I went on to join you guys for the Zoom, I did put on Everyone's Gone to the Movies with Mr. LePage.
Mm-hmm.
I love that song so much. It's such a nice sounding song. Like, just, that's what's masterful about them.
Yes.
To be able to combine.
Yes. You know,
that kind of aesthetic with those kind of words. And
yeah,
it's insane. Actually.
Malicious marimbas, you know? Yeah. And that's
malicious marimbas.
Yeah. And that also influenced why I painted him that way too, is it's this terrible, terrible thing happening under like, everything's all right. Everything's great. This is totally fine. You know, just something that I wanted to do also in these portraits is really, really portray the humanity of all of the characters and try and do as much as I could the thing that they do, which is leaves the judgment up to you, the viewer, up to you, the listener. Like, it is up to you to make the moral judgment on these guys, just like it's up to you, the listener, to make the moral judgment. Like,
there's no judgment of the people, of the characters in the songs. No.
Even like Cousin Dupree. Yikes. You know?
That's the closest, maybe, that there comes. Yes. She has that sort of monologue about, like, yes, what she thinks, yes, of him.
Yes. And but even then, it's the woman character who's in there who's experiencing it, and she gets to speak a little bit. But it's like, that's the closest, maybe a little bit of judgment in Haitian Divorce. There's a little disdain there.
Well, I love this book. Thank you so much for talking to us about it. Everybody should go out and buy it, because not only is the writing great, and I could have gone on and quoted a bunch of wonderful lines,
yes,
but not only that, the art that you have created in this book is just fantastic. I love it. And
thank
congratulations.
You. Thank you very much.
What do you do? Do you sell your art? Do you sell this,
yes,
art?
Hey, so I should plug things, huh? I am having a gallery show in Brooklyn, October 6th at Underland Gallery in Bay Ridge. And it runs October 6th through October 20th. But October 6th is the opening. We'll have an opening night and we'll have a closing night. Everything else is by appointment. And it's going to be the majority of the paintings, the original paintings from this book, on sale, along with a selection of limited edition signed numbered Giclée prints of select characters. And I am going to procure some Szechuan dumplings. I am
take
going
my
to-
money. Take yeah. my wallet.
I will, because I am an artist. And yeah. We'll get some Cuervo gold for people who imbibe. And Steely Dan will be playing all night. And it will be a great time. So Underland Gallery, October 6th. I am very much looking forward to it. So all of the paintings, which are gouache on paper, 18 by 24 or 9 by 12, will be available for purchase.
Oh, I really want to go to that. Hopefully we can make
Please it. Do. I would love to see you there.
We'll be there. Well, it's so great to talk to you. Thank you very
Likewise.
Much.
Likewise. Thank you all so much. This was great.
And welcome to New York.
Oh, God. I'm so happy to be back. So happy to be back. Even in like hot garbage season, it's home.